Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. We're here for another installment of It's My House. And today's jump-off topic is media deserts, media disruption, and YouTube. We have a special guest on, Professor Willie Wilson. Hudson. Willie Hudson will be on here soon in a few minutes. But here's what I want to do. We're going to take a little interlude in a moment or so. But if you go to our Facebook page, now Facebook page is It's My House at Earth Wealth Forest. Let's put in It's My House TV, actually. Go to Facebook, It's My House TV at Earth Wealth Forest. If you just put in It's My House TV, it'll pop up. And unless somebody has been on there since I last been on in this morning, there should be some maps on there in that first post. If it's not in the very first thing you see, just scroll down a little bit. It's a bunch of maps I have there on disappearing newspapers, and we're going to talk about what is a media desert and what opportunities exist for people who are aware of what a media desert is. And what, you know, I mean, if you're aware of these media deserts, you can basically take any opportunity and grow with it. So, all right, once again, go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV at Earth Wealth Forest. We'll just put in It's My House TV, it should pop up. And then look at the maps that we have on there on that particular link. And, you know, it'll help guide you through what we're going to be talking about today. All right, so we're going to take about a minute, 48 seconds, and we'll be back with our guest.
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like? Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area, and he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Okay, Willie, I see two numbers. Yeah, Well, just press 1. Press 1, and then I'll see you in the queue. And then I'll – got it. Got it. All right. Now, we're going to bring you on in a moment. All right. Now, once again, the jump-off topic for today is media deserts, media disruption, and YouTube. And if you're on Blog Talk Radio on our scrolling marquee, some of the topics we're going to cover today are, you know, media disruption, media deserts, AM and FM radio, daily newspapers, niche market media, social media stations, YouTube. We're talking about monetizing that. Newspaper deserts, ethnic news deserts, affordable housing deserts, affordable housing news deserts, radio station deserts, ethnic radio station deserts, financial literacy news, housing literacy news, and the new media billionaires. All right, those are some of the topics we hope to cover. Of course, whatever you guys want to discuss as well. Now, I mentioned that if you go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV, let's see, I'm going to it right now myself. Oops, wrong page. Okay. All right. So you scroll down, and under Vauban Sportsfall, all right, I got 16 pictures. And most of the ones I want you to pay attention to, which we'll cover over here, are the maps. All right, media maps. Like, for instance, I have the first map that comes up is Black Commercial Radio Ownership at a Glance. And there were 168, at least at the time of this map was drawn, 168 total radio stations, black-owned commercial radio stations in the United States. Actually, I don't know if they were all black-owned, but they have a format for African-Americans, 168. So 100 of those stations are FM, 100 of those stations are AM radio, and then 68 of those stations are FM. Now, I know there were three in my neck of the woods. I'm in Central Florida, and those three radio stations, two of them are no longer on the air, and one of them changed the format. It was sold, and they changed the format. So that's one map. The next map, counties considered news deserts. Okay, and that gives you a map of the, you know, the continental United States and Alaska. The red areas on there is where there are no newspapers. And then the yellow areas is, or lime areas are where there's maybe one newspaper. That's it. Scrolling down a little bit more, where are the ethnic voices? There's another map. Hispanic, you know, or Latino, and then other. Below that map is... where have the newspapers disappeared? A lot of newspapers that come out weekly have gone out of business. Even the large ones like the Detroit Free Press, they might publish three editions a week, hard copy. But they, you know, People go online. All right. The next map below that is, do you live in a news desert? And there's different ways to define news, but that map says, do you live in a news desert? And you see there are quite a few news deserts across the United States. Then the map below that says, counties without newspapers. And you'll see there are quite a few counties that don't have a newspaper within the whole county. Below that says the Media Deserts Project. Let me see. All right, now I got it read. Now, below that it says the total number of newspapers in the United States fell from 8,891 in 2004 to 7,112 in 2018, a decline of 1,779 newspapers, including more than 60 dailies. Of the remaining publications, an estimated 1,000 to 1,500 newspapers were considered ghost newspapers after scaling back their news coverage so much that they were unable to fully cover their communities. All right, and then news desert. A news desert refers to the community that is no longer covered by daily or non-daily newspapers. The term emerged in the United States after hundreds of daily and weekly newspapers were closed in the 2000s and in 2010s. According to the study in 2018 by the UNC North Carolina School of Media and Journalism, more than 1,300 communities in the United States are considered news deserts. Now, there's slightly over 3,000 counties in the United States. More than 1,300 of them are news deserts. That's a lot of counties here in the United States, right? Other communities, while not technically a news desert, may be covered by a ghost newspaper, and a ghost newspaper is a publication that has become a shadow of its former self. All right, then below that, I've got news deserts. 75% of the southern counties in the United States, and there's a map with this, 75% of the southern counties in the United States are news deserts. 50% of the non-south counties in the United States are news deserts with only one or no newspapers reporting trusted local news. And there's a map of that. And that's a very interesting map. In my opinion, you can ask this question. Is there a race problem in the United States, or is there an information void in the United States? Simply because there's no media in certain areas. That's in that map. We can come back to that map later. Below that, another map below that is how many newspapers are near you, and there's a map of that. Let's see, and I think, okay, where have the newspapers disappeared to? Then there's another map, America's Growing News Deserts. Then below that, there's another map, The Vanishing Daily Newspapers from 2004 to 2016. So you got, within this map, it's got closed or merged newspapers. And then in the gray dots is weekly or reduced to weekly newspapers. All right, so that'll sort of give you a visual on some of the topics we'll be talking about today. And now the beauty of the disappearing newspapers or these new media deserts is anybody within the sound of my voice, you can go in and start your own newspaper or start your own what I call social media station. I didn't come up with that term. Somebody I know on Clubhouse, which is an audio app, but that's where the ball's going. You can. There's a bunch of – there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. That's municipal corporations, towns that have it. And then in towns that have a population of 1 to over 8 million people. And you got a lot of unincorporated towns in the United States. But here's the thing. You can find a media desert, and there's a lot of them out there. And you can go in and really set up your own network. Here's where you heard it first. I don't know what today's date is. Sooner or later, you're going to hear about, I think within the next 5 to 10 years, probably next 5 years, you're going to hear about some people becoming billionaires because they went into media deserts, towns that they're populated, but they don't have any newspaper, radio, TV, nothing like that. But they go in and they set up a local media information, and that's what we call them, social media stations. I think some of the new billionaires are going to come pop up out of that. So in any event, and then we'll get to YouTube, because yesterday somebody was asking about YouTube. YouTube is the world's largest de facto television station. Not regulated by the FCC, to my knowledge. And there'll be other people, and there are other people out there that have video sites like YouTube. Anybody within the sound of my voice, you can create your own YouTube platform where you're not regulated. If you start one today, okay, you're not regulated by any government. So, okay. So let me get to, I guess we have, let me get to my studio here. A classmate of mine, I graduated from West Texas State University, which is now West Texas A&M University. And I majored in mass communication, electronic media. Back when nobody had a smartphone, because they hadn't been invented yet. The internet was around, but most people didn't know about it. People weren't walking around texting, although they had beepers back then, at least doctors did. But Willie Hudson was one of my classmates back during those days. Now it's West Texas A&M University. And he's worked in the field, so I'll let him share, you know, what he's done with that. And he's taught as well on the university level. So wait a minute. Let's see, Willie. Hopefully it's Willie, because the hand went down. All right. Well, let's see if it is. Willie,
hello.
You there? Yeah. Right. You there? Good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, give us your background. Let's start from where you came from, how you ended up at West Texas, and that crazy major of mass communication, electronic media, and then your first job and stuff like that.
Oh, you want a life rundown? You don't have time for that.
Abbreviated.
Okay, all right. So I worked at a TV station in San Antonio for about 11 years. And then I went to another TV station there. So together, I guess it's about 12 years of TV. And along the way, some freelance jobs with different networks and various positions. Worked in horse racing for a while. Ended up working at Texas State Technical College for 20 years. And doing all kinds of video work there, as well as had my own business on the side, doing various consulting and video production.
And you taught in the classroom as well on the university level, correct?
Yeah, at the college, yeah. I was an adjunct as well as staff, yes.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Well, where do you see, because you're boots on the ground with this, the evolution, I guess that's the best word I can think of mass communication, radio, TV, stuff like that?
All right, so to address your first thing about the TV stations and the newspapers disappearing, back in the 90s, the FCC did away with the 7 rule, which said you can only own 7 TV stations, 7 radio stations, 7 newspapers. That was the limit. And so they did away with that. That had been in force for 31 years. So by 1990, they abolished it. So that meant that you can buy up all you can own. So, for instance, there's a local station here that they have stations throughout Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Colorado, et cetera. So they're a conglomerate. But in that, it still says you can't own more than one station within that market. So, and then the same with the newspapers. It all goes the same. So now you got these big companies buying up the smaller newspapers. And so when they buy them up, they close them down. Now you don't have one source of information. So whether it's good information or bad information, you still have that one source. Same with magazines and et cetera. Because as we've seen, like Ebony and Jet go away to other companies that actually own them. They're not owned by their founders anymore.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of magazines that are owned by one company. They may keep the same name, but they're only owned by this one company. And so just because you're reading the New York Times or something, or the Hereford newspaper, it doesn't mean it's not owned by the New York Times or Rupert Murdoch or whatever. So Disney owns a whole bunch of things. It's Disney, but they own ABC and more. You know, so Sony owns TV stations and as well as all the movie stuff, et cetera. So they're all these guys are just huge conglomerates that buy up everything. So like you're saying, they can. So you're limited with the source of information. And when you're saying go back into the community, there are community newspapers. I know we have two that come to mind that focus on the local issues or the local people or local happenings, because your national newspapers will not do that. They're going to give you the national news, and they only show up in your town when there's a disaster of some sort.
Right. Well, it's like back in the when we were coming out, like in high school, junior high school, and all that, even in college, with local radio, you had local radio celebrities that we know known in that particular market, just like on that TV show WKRP in Cincinnati, which was on when we were in college. Well, those TV characters were basically local celebrities in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, based on the TV show. But in real life, you had, you know, I don't know of any local radio personalities now. There might be, and I'm somewhere, somebody somewhere, but now I'm in my neck of the woods, and, you know, I don't know about your neck of the woods, but it seems like the local radio celebrity has disappeared. Maybe not be extinct totally yet, but they're not out there like they used to be. And
yeah, iHeart Radio is heard everywhere. And so here in town, we listened to, there was three personalities. And so over the years, matter of fact, up until maybe a year or so ago, it was down to two. And so they got rid of that one, and now there's only one. So they, from three, well, actually probably from four when we first moved here 20 years ago, but now it's down to one. And that one is not on all the time, just, you know, on in the mornings for local morning news and weather and stuff. And then around 11 o'clock, that's it. They're done. It's all national people. And I had a student that was on a radio station, and it was a Hispanic radio station, but he was one of the four DJs that, or five DJs they had. And he broadcast from his closet, and he'd go do his 4 hours, 3 or 4 hours from his closet. And of course, with the internet, you can be anywhere and carry on your show. You don't have to be at that location. So virtual DJs, I guess you can call them. Yes.
Right, and they've automated a lot of stuff. But, all right, for instance, I used to first thing, anybody that would broadcast on, because local, AM radio mm-hmm. and FM radio to a high degree, even today, they're supported by, particularly AM radio, they're supported by, historically at least, by local business people. The guy who earned, let's take it Canyon, Texas, where we went to school. You know, the guy who owned the burger shop, Taylor & Sons grocery store, the Pizza Hut that was there, maybe a barber shop was there, and then churches as well. But they were all local business establishments that were, essentially kept AM radio going for decades. And a lot of those stations have gone off the air now. So where do you see, because a lot of these conglomerates like iHeart, they automate so they don't need that many local employees anymore. And they go for the national advertisers, like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Walmart, what have you. So, but a small entrepreneur as such as myself, I'm looking out for media outlets that can reach my target audiences locally. But I find that, I had to basically invent something and then find that audience or build it up like your traditional stations did it 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 100 years ago, since the 30s or 20s. Because you want a universal level, what are they teaching the students, MassCom students, on a university level?
Well, first off, they are, number one, you can't really specialize into one area. When I started in TV, we had a graphics person that's all they did was make the graphics. We had a camera person that only ran camera, an audio person, et cetera. We had an art department that created the graphics and all that. So today, that's one person, because the way the technology's gone, in the last 5 years for sure, there's robotic cameras have taken over the studio. So we started off with four people in the studio had a teleprompter. We had three cameras in the studio. So those three cameras are just down to two cameras, and it's just those cameras. It's not a person there. And then the teleprompters can have a safety person to watch the teleprompter if necessary, but the anchors control their own teleprompter. And they even have smart prompters to where they'll go as fast as you read. If you slow down, it slows down. So, but so those things are completely automated. And then the graphics that go on the screen, it puts the person's name in. Well, the producer can do that when they type up the script. They can actually put those there. So it's not a need for a person, necessarily a character generator, because the script will generate its own characters. You just create the format for it. And as the person's typing the script, they can say, oh, we need to put up Lee Davis right here. So your name will pop up when you show up on the screen, and without a character, without anybody sitting there. So it's more automated all the way down. So you have less people doing the same job. So
it sounds like artificial intelligence is involved with this.
Yes, a lot of it. And then the other thing is going back to, they have gone back to the reporter photographer. So I remember interning there in Amarillo,
And the reporter was also a photographer, and they had it was a manual camera, so they had to they had a string that was 6 feet, so it touched the string to the bridge of their nose. Now they know they're in focus if they stood out the end of the camera length, because the lens was fixed, so they know where to set their focal length, and so they would touch the string to the end of their nose, and then they go ahead and do their interview. And it was interesting to watch, but today it's back to the same thing, because you just have a reporter and the camera for local news. There's a reporter and a camera, and that's it. And occasionally you have a camera person, can't say cameraman anymore, camera person. But so it's going backwards to just that one person. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see I'm going to go out there, but if we saw more or less a drone fly in, do the interview via drone, and keep going, you wouldn't have to have a person out there.
And you know what?
Flying, or rather that's a robotic.
I never thought about that, but you're right. That is innovation. Because, for instance, like on Facebook, matter of fact, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, occasionally you'll see people shooting each other or doing some wild stuff, but they get it, you know, you can live stream instantaneously now. So
yeah.
Now
right.
The whatever we call news is no longer controlled by the major networks or even the local networks. Because a news story is a news story, particularly if it goes viral. So I'm glad you brought up that point where you can send a drone out now. Why have a reporter?
Right. And the other thing that has happened, which was a discussion many years ago when I was at NAB, there's a reporter own their image and their voice. Because, for instance, they were looking at Walter Cronkite. So Walter Cronkite had such a delivery and a way about him where people just enjoyed listening to Walter Cronkite. Well, they have enough
right.
of his voice already and enough of his image to where they can reenact Walter right now, and he would be the person you hear delivering the news, because they can just type anything. As you know, with AI, they can type anything in there and have it said. Matter of fact, on the news the other day, they were talking about how we're seeing this deep fakes. So they said it can take 3 seconds of audio, of your audio, and now they can have you saying anything they want.
Well, I've seen some video of Thomas Jefferson talking.
Mm-hmm.
And George Washington talking.
Yeah, but
and if I didn't know better, yeah, I don't know what they sounded like, but the optics of it looked like they were really talking in 2023.
Right. So Forrest Gump was the introduction of that. You know, Forrest Gump, he talked to all these people that were passed that were dead. He talked to all of them, shaking hands with John Wayne, everything. So
he still did. He sure did. Well, I guess the newscaster as we know it will be, I guess that industry will be shrinking as far as employment goes, sounds like. Because like you said, you can use a drone.
Mm-hmm.
You got artificial intelligence out here.
And so the other thing I see is that, you know, there's cameras already practically on every corner. So why do I need to send somebody out there? Why I can just tap into one of those cameras just sitting out there?
You got a good point. The effect of YouTube on visual media, your thoughts on that?
YouTube's a great platform for a lot of people to express themselves. And they try and regulated to some extent with what people put on. And then, you know, there are some requirements to work before you can be to where you can go live on YouTube, let's say on a regular basis. They do have some requirements. Mm-hmm. But there are people, I have a friend here locally that he put together his own little broadcast studio, and he does all kind of events. He does a lot of live streaming for people, and he's up and running. And his local stuff, whether it's local sports, he's got a little thing all about Waco or my town, Waco, my town or something. And so he does about local people, et cetera. But you, the thing is to build an audience for it. So that's the bigger challenge, is to build an audience. Now, of course, we know the crazy zany things always builds an audience, but how can you not only build an audience, but retain it? And that's the bigger challenge, to build an audience and retain it. Do you have enough people that's interested in what you're doing to retain that?
Okay. Well, with some of the things you're talking about, drones or whatever, now the, because like I say, the, I'm just looking at radio, which AM radio was used to be my go-to, is no longer my go-to. So what technologies, and you probably named some already, are people using today to replace what, in, like, say, look, well, where I'm at? Three radio stations, two of them have gone out of business, and one was sold to somebody else, and it completely changed the format. Mm-hmm. So in order for me to tell, now, the market of people I'm interested in still live here, mm-hmm. but I've got to invent some kind of way via YouTube or whatever, or I guess you can do some creative with drones, but well, what do you suggest right. for the local entrepreneur?
But you're doing it right now with the podcast. So podcasting is a way of doing delivering a message. And I just mm-hmm. drove out to Georgia last week. Had some family affected by those tornadoes that went through there. So on the way, you had mentioned prior about the AM radio. So I listened for AM radio leaving out of Texas. Took almost 4 hours mm-hmm. to get out of Texas, but AM radio was so spotty. Even in Louisiana and Alabama, there was more. I found more in Alabama and Georgia than I did in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. But there were more AM radio that popped up. Now they weren't clear. They were all kind of staticky,
and nobody was clear.
Right. Well, that means they're low power because they weren't powerful right. enough to stay in for long periods of time. And so they were low power. And the ones that were stronger were your typical talk show type, national talk show type stations. I found right. in Alabama, I did find one locally sounding, because they kept mentioning the name of their town they were in. And talked about, the local grocery store and stuff like that and local events. And so, but that was in Alabama. FM, of course, there's a whole bunch of FM, but they're all competing with XM and other satellite radio stations.
Even with a lot of FM stations, a lot of those, they're depending on local listenership, and of course, a local merchant. For instance, I'm doing a podcast right now, but we have people. I mean, I'm in one place. You're in Texas right now. I'm in Florida. We got people listening from Illinois. We got people. I mean, because this show is downloaded around the clock. You got people from Russia or Moscow that I might be listening to the Philippines. So, however, what and all that sounds good, but as a merchant, an entrepreneur, like one of the things we want to do here this year is have local events where we're building tiny houses, that type thing. So if I got a group in Chicago, I need a critical mass in Chicago to come out, because I can't expect a person from Florida or Texas to come to Illinois for like a day or two. So, and I guess we'll get into the mechanics of that week by week on how to build up a local audience, because you can do podcasts on a local level, I guess, if you attend like maybe local events, like, you know, if you go to a Starbucks, you know, if the manager says it's okay, you can do a live stream from there. And I get, you know, you can do it with drones too for the, you know, the optical, you know, visual effect, but you've done this on the side. Like, for instance, churches used to, you know, on weekends used to heavily broadcast on, you know, radio stations, particularly AM or FM. Are you up to date on what they're doing now? Because I'm not.
There's a lot of churches on FM radio. I listen to, like I said, as I was driving across the country, you hear a lot of not only just gospel channels, but they would be promoting local church events at whatever city you're in and whatever town you're in. You hear about local events at the churches. So there's still an audience for the church message on FM. And I guess they have a big enough audience to where they're still plugging along. However, there's a lot of churches that have diversified to where they are, you know, some of them are heavy on Facebook, some of them are heavy into YouTube. So, and then they have their blogs and they have their, I did a setup for a church that their main thing is Zoom. But they make it as though in order to join the Zoom, it's more like you have, not that you're a member, but you're getting something exclusive. So they make it seem exclusive if you join the Zoom broadcast, because they say, well, if you're going to join our Zoom broadcast, you need to go to our church website and register. So that's the way they do it. But they're averaging 300-400 people locally on the Zoom cast, not counting that they told me they have like 80 people from around the world watching their broadcast every Sunday and a midday, and then they do stuff during the week as well. So, but that you have to work at it. You have to constantly advertise or attract people's attention somehow or another.
Right. Well, I've been on. William Pfeiffer, if you remember him when we were at WT,
yeah.
played professional football for a while in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's got a church now in Tulia. So during the pandemic, I used to, you know, tune into his. He was on like at least twice a week via Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And but since the pandemic is, I guess it's no more than the United States. They've gone back. They stopped doing the Zoom call. Well, they do something on Sundays with Zoom. Oh, no, Facebook. And then, because they're back in the sanctuary. You know, back when, you know, because they have a church, a sanctuary in Tulia, Texas. They were doing things by Zoom, but then now that everybody can go back out again, they stop the Zoom calls, except they do a live stream on Sunday, and you know, people, you know, started going back to the sanctuary. But that's what I see. Now, that was an audience that I can go to on a gospel radio station back in the late 80s, early 90s. But like I said, a lot of those stations don't exist. So it's now, okay, what technology does exist? And like you said, I had to, you got to build it from scratch. Because there are quite a few people that that do podcasts, but it's I look at everything. I see this as like a pioneer phase still. It's the Wild West, and people are inventing or reinventing themselves on how to particularly reach their particular market. Because I never thought about it until you said it. You know, why hire a street reporter when I can get a drone? And a drone can go to the location, not be in anybody's way, and you get audio, you get visual.
You can talk. Have a little speaker on there to where they can talk to the person there, and they can hear the questions and everything. You know,
that would eliminate like some of those, like on a national level. Or even on a local level, you have some of these newscasters that have like seven-figure contracts. But why pay seven figures out, or six figures out, or even four figures out? You can just get a drone. I don't know how much drones cost, but you're going to get it in real time. No, not as much as that. Well, now, so like you said, so you drove across the country, so the FM was sparse. Now, what about these like HD stations? You know, AM, HD, one, and all that. What's the deal with those stations?
Well, they're slowly coming along, but what's really beating them is the satellite.
Okay.
Satellite more or less your HD gives you a better, it's supposed to be signal strength is better, but still if we go under a bridge, you still lose your signal. But I guess they're work on that where you don't lose out your signal going under bridges.
Now let's go back to YouTube, because you have people that are listening and interested in YouTube. Well, let me ask you this. There are a lot of professions that exist today that were not invented when we were in school, like social media managers, vloggers, YouTube. You have people out here making $15,000 to $35,000 a month or more from their YouTube channel. So the term YouTuber it wasn't a profession back then. And, there's no bachelor's degree program that I know of where, you ask a kid, what are you going to study in school? Well, I'm going to study YouTubing. It's going to be my major, and I plan on getting a Bachelor of Science or a Bachelor of Arts in YouTubing. I don't think that exists. So... if it does, let me know. But because you have a lot of people learning in real time, and you have a lot of professions popping up that you just don't hear about in college. I'll give you another example. There in the National Basketball Association or the National Football League, there is no bachelor's degree on becoming a professional basketball player or football player. Nobody has a degree in basketball. There's no Bachelor of Science degree or Bachelor of Arts degree. Yet, you've got all these millionaires. So, And it's sort of like, where's college or the university education fitting into this, you know, as far as communication goes? But even why should a person even go to college now for that?
You know, there's a lot a person can learn just from being online.
True.
But there's still those people that, you know, let's say I can build a web page, but the way I'm building it may take me, I don't know, let's say take me several hours to build it, where if I learn the proper way of building it, it'll take me maybe 30 minutes to do the same thing it's taking me 3 hours to do, because the way I'm going about it is the long way, where if I had taken a class in it, I'll learn that, oh, I can minimize these steps. I can reduce these steps down to maybe 10 steps versus doing the 20 steps that I was doing. And then just the finite issues of it. So, for instance, I was doing a photography class, and so anybody can take a picture. Everybody's got a phone, you take a picture. But can you take a picture that creates enough interest? So how do you take an interesting picture is different from just taking a picture. Oh, I can take a picture of this building. Everybody can see this building. So, but if I'm going to say this, if a professional photographer took the same picture, it looks different from you just snapping a picture of it, because that person's been trained to know that, oh, if I shoot it from this angle or from that angle or low or high or whatever, change my f-stop or my ASA or my shutter speed or what, I can create more dynamic look from this image than just taking a picture, because anybody can take a picture. So that's one of the things. And speaking of photography, you know, 10 years ago, the print industry really took a hit with people taking pictures of their phone. Maybe 20 years ago, it started affecting them 20 years ago as cameras became better and better on your phones, because it's
we're talking about digital cameras.
Grainy. Yes, digital cameras on your phone, because you can take a picture of your phone, send it to Walgreens, for instance, and they'll print it for you. You just go there and pick it up. Or, but a lot of people just keep it on their phone or keep it on their computer, and you just send it to anybody and everybody all around the world. So you don't have to print it at all. You can just send them a picture. That's the advantage of the phone. The disadvantage is, oftentimes that after you see the picture, what do you do with it? You delete it, because you don't want to take up space on your computer.
Right. Well, now they're expanding. But now you got more space on your phone
desktop, cloud,
and you can always add. Right. Exactly.
Right. So, but then you have an expense. After you get to a certain point, you have to pay for that extra space. So myself, I don't like paying extra for it. I go buy myself an external drive, and it take a lot of pictures to fill up a terabyte or 2 terabytes of space on my external drive. But then I have it forever. I don't have to worry about it. I can go back and look at it. But those things are so that drove people out of. I had a friend that's working in photography at a print shop, and so he was out of work by 2002, 2005. He's out of work because the print shop closed. And that wasn't the only print shop that closed down. Tons of them closed down. So to find a look for a print shop in your town that just prints photos. Most of them have to go into other things. You know, they're doing, you know, banners or whatever. You have to have something extra to survive. But if you're just a photo place, like there's probably back in San Antonio, there's probably 100 places that just printed photos. And so I know I was trying to buy one of them. But today you can probably count that on one hand of places that their main focus is printing photos. You probably just find maybe 2 that exist. Otherwise,
Video stores, I don't know if any video stores, the mom and pop type, is still around, but I think there might be one Blockbuster here open. But I mean, for me, I stream everything. I missed the last movie I saw. I saw a 3D movie over in just because it was a huge 3D screen over in Germany. But then the last movie I saw in the United States where I paid to go see a first run was Ray, starring Jamie Foxx. That's the last time I went to a movie theater. Anything else? I'm a Netflix, Hulu, Tubi, and Amazon person. And I stream. You know, most times, movie type.
We went to the theater to see Wakanda, and the theater is pretty much empty. But there's nothing like sitting in that theater to get the full effect of the movie for me, because you can't have the full effect at home. I mean, I got surround sound, all that stuff, but it's still not like sitting in that theater, you know, because at home I got distractions. You know, I get up, go get a drink, or whatever.
You do get that experience, but now here's what's happening in real time today. You said that there weren't that many people in the theater.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
How long did that movie theater sustain that? Because they got to pay property tax, they got to pay rent, if they're paying rent, they got to pay an employee or two.
Right.
And all that. So how long can they sustain?
Well, what happened here in town was we got a new theater come into town. There was already two, so now we have a third one. And so that third one came in, and since it's new, everybody goes over to the new one. You know, you want to see the new theater, so it's like in a new theater. So the new theater stays busy. And the other two theaters, they're even closed now. The one we went to, I think they're closed 2 days a week now. Maybe 3 days a week, but I know they're closed at least 2 days a week because they don't have enough people coming in there. And I think the other one's just open on weekends. But you're right. So people watching at home, you know, get your subscription to where you can get all the first run movies when they come out, you know. So
right.
But yeah, there's a lot of people watch at home. But for me, since I'm old school, for me, there's still nothing like being in that theater, having that full experience. It still wins out for me. You know, when people first started streaming movies and everything, the movie industry went berserk. They lost their mind. Oh, nobody's going to go to the theater. Well, the theaters were still selling out. That's when they were able to give these reports, like, what's that animated thing with the people underwater? I forget what it's called. Avatar. Made, what, $1 billion? It made $1 billion the first week. Well, and they're talking about people going to the theater. They're not talking about the people subscribing. We're just talking about theater people. So how much did it really make counting the subscriber people? Twice that? Three times that?
Right.
But we're talking about butts in the seat. So it's the record industry went through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say technology has changed.
Well, hold on. We got a couple of callers here that I think want to chime in. 602 area code, your mic is open.
Hey, good morning, L.A. Good morning, Mr. Bianchi. How y'all feeling? This Pastor Don Jr.
Fine. How you doing, Don?
I'm good, man. I'm enjoying the conversation. I definitely understand the aspect of the theater at home is not like a theater with the popcorn and the old ambiance of the movie going experience. So I'm definitely with you. I'm texting everybody, telling them, come on. The show is on right now. So I'm here.
Now, you did have a faux pas, I don't know, within the last 5 years at some theater, some nut went in there and shot up the place. But that, I think it was only maybe one incident of that. But, well, you know what? It's a niche. They might have had some of these in right outside of Washington, D.C. Somebody took a movie theater and converted it into they innovated it, rather. It was called the Bethesda Cinema Draft House, and in the Northern Virginia had one called Arlington Cinema Draft House. And what it was a movie theater, but they took out the traditional chairs and all that. And they had, like, little tables, you know, tables for, like, two or three or four people at the largest. And there were comfortable chairs with the table, and then there would be a menu on the table. And with the menu, you can order a glass of wine or whatever kind of beverage that you wanted to order, and then snacks. Like sliders, chicken tenders, or fingers, or whatever you want to call it. You know, finger foods, maybe burgers or whatever. And hot, served hot. And that was a pretty nice experience. And you can see a first-run movie in a lounge setting. And I imagine people have taken that concept in other parts of the United States as well. So for something like that, I think it's worth, you know, I would go out to a movie for that experience. Mm-hmm. Willie, have you run across anything like that in your travels?
At the theater you're talking about?
Yeah, at the theater, where it was set up like a lounge, and, you know, it's a first-run movie, but I saw Dancing Like Wolves like that. You know?
I forget the name.
They have a waiter to wait to come and take your order. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a chain that we went to a place like that where we went to matter of fact, we were in San Antonio, went to a theater where, you know, you had a little table in front of you and the chairs were really plush and you know, they bring you food, you had a menu, you can order whatever you
want.
And the waitress is walking around. And my first thought was, boy, this person's going to be blocking my movie. Well, I never even noticed them. Once the movie started, I never saw them.
Yeah, exactly. You don't see.
I never noticed them. Yeah, I didn't even notice them. They were probably in there, but I didn't notice them.
Right. Right. So I think that niche will still exist. Of course, the Super Bowl is coming up next month, February. So now Super Bowl parties are more like you're going over a friend's house. And people get into it that way, but.
Right.
Yeah. Don, now, you want to pro anything?
Oh, man, I just want everybody to get ready for the Winning Team Global Connections Tour. We're going to be visiting 22 markets. We're going to purchase 22 abandoned buildings, and we're going to change the community all across America.
All right. And now, how can we hear you? Because you're on Blog Talk, too. Give us a number for that.
You call me direct. Because everybody's on different time zones, and I never sleep. So definitely hit me at 602-478-1619. Once again, that's 602-478-1619.
Okay, hit him up on there. He's got some good programming. Let's take another caller here, 773. Your mic is open.
Hey there, guys. Grand Rising. How are you?
Great, Reba. Good to hear your voice. What's happening?
Good. Thanks. So, yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation as well because someone very popular was just talking about streaming. He's a popular DJ, Folly Jack Master Funk, if anybody likes house music. I do all kinds of music. As you know, Brother L.A., I'm a singer. And I got this event coming up, and so we had a situation where two of my sons were able to help to move some things out of storage for a young lady on yesterday, and we connected in the interim with Jack Master, Folly Jack Master Funk. He's got a street named here in Chicago after him. Who's from, anybody familiar with him from Chicago?
I'm not, but I don't live in Chicago, though.
Yeah, you're not in Chicago. So right on the southeast side of Chicago, he's got a new store what's the name of the store, but Farley's, I think he's got a DTLR. He's got one of those brands that the young people, I remember buying stuff. My son wanted to go to a certain store, but he's got a new store on 87th Street. He's got a mobile, it's like a high-tech mobile studio. And actually, he's got about, I know he's got two. I think last night he told me he had about three. Anyway, he was talking about streaming because he is a high-profile DJ. And he said that he's going to be in Miami the weekend of my event, which is next week. He's going to be in Miami, he and his wife and his family and his circle. But he said, no, he said, you make more money by streaming. He said, no, he said, I'm going to be in Miami during, you know, I have an event. But he said, I'm going to be streaming everywhere else. And Househead is like, I don't know if y'all see a step or two.
It's interesting that you bring up streaming. And every year I cover this at least once. On November the 11th, in China, there's an event. It's a cultural type thing called Singles Day. It's the equivalent.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Of what
yeah.
we call, yeah, it's what we, it's our equivalent of Black Friday. But it dwarfs, it makes a lot more money than Black Friday. And what they do is you have a lot of people that they're selling something. They're selling everything you can think of, from rocket launchers, houses, cars, lipstick, dresses. Farmers sell out their crops for that particular harvest. And people essentially do it using their smartphones. Their smartphones. So now, Reba, you do some live streams. Like, you got an event coming up the 3rd of February. I imagine that's going to be live streamed. Reba, you there?
Yeah, I do have some other people working on that because, mm-hmm. imagine, I've been talking. I've got to save my voice for the band because I'm singing, too. So the Grand Ballroom, they have flat screens and so forth. So I have a young person. This is the concept of this event, to have young people versus old school. The young people come in with their technology, style of dance, this and the other. The conference is going to be the first part of the evening, and then red carpet, my band, and the older coming in the evening. Some of the people who are going to be in the evening event are going to speak to the youth and let those youth know about what it's like to be a professional, making money in a fine form of art and design. And their technology piece is key because we do have a drop-down screen. But then this one guy I met over at Visions on 119th, it's a venue as well. He said that they like literally built like a backdrop with lighting and all this kind of stuff, really advanced. He works for Yamaha. So I'm looking at, you know, things that I don't know. I'm bringing adults and youth, old school versus new school. And the Steppers contest is actually going, and the evening that would start at 8 is going to be just that, old school versus new school. But the conference itself, the young people are going to, before they perform, they have to have a bio of someone in their field, be it that they're a poet, be it that they're an artist, a publisher, I mean, book publisher, or they want to become a book publisher. They're going to read a short bio of someone that they've researched. So all of my events are going to have some kind of educational piece in there. And like I said, with that technology piece, I do have Michael Logic, who is going to come. He is one of, he's like the only Black, and it, a lot of times he's a tech master, tech, Michael Logic. He's a, how do I put this? I don't want to say just techie, because he's not just like, he's what was he going to do for, I was introducing him to She creates a web design and a computer program. But I was introducing him to Sarah E., that's a new school here in Chicago. They were going to call it Obama or something like that, Obama Academy. It's a science, technology, engineering, and math academy. And I connected him with them for the purpose of getting these young people to actually see someone of color, actually engage with them, yeah, on the technology side. So that's what this is all about, this event. And when you talked about streaming, and I talked to Farley on last night, I was like, yeah, the Grand Ballroom has flat screens in here. We could stream our event. And I do Facebook Lives, and I let the young people introduce their products where people could actually make a purchase online, inbox them, Cash App them, whatever they need to do to get that money to them. Generally, when I do daytime events, like a pop-up in the daytime, I would have them to the people can come by. If they're watching from home, especially during shelter-in-place, the COVID shelter-in-place, they would take the items to the door. A person could order online. They have products on hand, and they would just pick them up with security patrol delivery to the car.
Okay.
So, you and I talked about StreamYard. So is that what you guys were referring to? Because I really just was trying to comment on what I was listening to. You're talking about theater versus streaming, right?
Well, StreamYard is streaming. Now, we were talking about, I mean, for instance, we would talk a few things, but for instance, name a radio station, AM radio station, that was popular in Chicago where you are. How far can we go back with you? 30 years, 20 years, what?
WVON, very popular, yeah.
Now, VON's still popular, but
it wasn't. When I was little, VON, WBMX.
Let's go back to when you were 15. Okay. When you were 15, what was a popular AM radio station in Chicago?
Been around for ages.
All right. Now, is that strictly an AM station?
Certainly AM, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, do people listen to them still to this day?
Yes. It's not as popular. I'm trying to remember who. Someone just referred me to 1390. Okay. Oh, JPC, WJPC. That was a popular one as well.
Now that used to be owned by John H. Johnson, who owned Ebony and Jet magazine, right?
I think so, yeah. WJPC. I think Bonnie DeShawn was on there.
Matter of fact, Tom Jordan was on that station, wasn't he, at one time?
I think so. Tom Jordan, JPC. Yeah, he doesn't seem to age. It's really great because he's still doing his thing. He shows up here and there, though. I will say that because I was like, yeah.
The 1390 station, so hold on, I'm looking them up right now. WGRB, they still had those callers?
I'm familiar with GRB, WGRB. What you mean as far as the connect with the 1390?
Yeah, is it? Well, what do you listen to? How often do you listen to AM
stations? I did listen to 1390, and back then, WJTC, WBMX, they did, 1390 actually did have where they played R&B, and I mean, just because the radio was on, I got to hear some Anita Baker, all the way from Anita Baker to the classics, legendary Sam Cooke, B.B. King. And a lot of times I just, you know, if I wasn't playing my own little boom box with the cassette tape, I would be listening to you know, because it was mostly, it was talk, it was the talk of the town, but they also had music, just so you know. Lou Palmer was the talk of the town, and we had the talking drum. We had a lot of talking segments on that 1390. But I grew up on 1390 WBMX, which was the R&B, that's like the new Z103. And
all right, now, yeah. Today, who are you listening? Do you listen, still listen to them today, or where are you listening?
Not very much. I don't really listen to the radio as much. I don't even have cable in my house. I have a smart TV that I just look at it and looks at me. So I'm going to get that together because I do need to – I want to use my TV because it's got Roku and all that streaming and all that. I listen to a lot of YouTube. But if I listen to the radio, and I also have – when I was in Wisconsin – what was that station in Wisconsin? So here in Chicago, Z103 is what I prefer. GCI here and there. WHPK is actually, it was based out of the Hyde Park area, WHPK, which stands for Hyde Park, HPK. So it's a small, they have a small segment on the wavelengths on the airwaves, but I do know some DJs that still do shows. They do their segments on WHPK. But V103, like
now,
even while
spending more time on, are you spending more time online versus radio? For instance, we met right here, or we're on Blog Talk now, internet. Occasionally we do stuff on Clubhouse, which is an audio app online. I don't even hear anybody mention anything about WVON hardly up in Chicago.
Well, unfortunately, it was sold, from what I understand. They sold it. It was no longer black owned, so maybe that's why you don't hear much about it. Yeah.
Well, do they? You also have to get out into the see. One of the things that radio used to do historically is they would get out into the community, and that's where those local celebrities would develop. Where they would have contests and in events. You know, they would show up at basketball games, baseball games, all that. You know, but Willie, what's your take on that? With it seems like radio, AM or FM, they have abandoned the local community. Maybe not in all places, but in many places. What's your take on it?
Okay, well, I apologize. Yes, WVON 1690 live stream now. They did get out into the community and did contest. So is anybody online from Chicago? Nobody from Chicago?
There is, but they got to raise their hand. Oh, hold on, Reba. Willie, what's your take on it, though?
Okay. Just like we were saying previously, though, that local radio station kind of just taking a beating because of the national conglomerates buying up everything. Just like she mentioned a minute ago, that the black-owned radio station's no longer, and it's been bought out. So there's ways of drying up that market by saturating it with these larger conglomerates. Even though I'm bringing up iHeart again, so iHeart has their regular daily contest, and you know, for callers like the old days, you know, caller number whatever, call in and give us an answer. But you're not competing locally; you're competing nationally. You're competing. If it's not national, it's statewide, you know. So it's no more local flavor for it. And so, but like she also mentioned that, you know, getting out into the community and covering events. Now, our local, a couple of our local radio stations do still, they have their truck, they go to whatever, Home Depot or something, where our they have the farmer's market on Saturdays. Sometimes they're down at the farmer's market, you know, and they may say, we're going to give away some prizes at the farmer's market just to help attract the crowd to the farmer's market. But those are far and few between. but they're still out trying to survive off of that local flavor and local advertising. However, the audience for it, as we are also helping drive the audience for local radio because we listen to other things. I listen to Pandora. We all have our favorite things we want to listen to, and so we tend to cater towards those things.
Right.
Because we find, oh, well, if I want to listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire, I could either go put my album on, or I can just go to Pandora and say, play all the greatest hits, and I'll listen to all the greatest hits as I'm out walking around the yard or driving or whatever. So we all kind of get spoiled with some of the technology, but at the same time, it's taken away from interactivity. You know, we see that with our youth right now where they don't talk to each other. They sit at the table and text each other or Snapchat each other right at the table instead of turning to the person and speaking to them. And so that to me is kind of a downfall of a lot of things. But which I won't get into, but those things kind of deter the pureness of some things. You know, going to a concert, it's like you're talking about your son's performing, you're performing, and so going to a concert, there's nothing to replace actually going to a concert and having a live experience. You can look at everything you want to on any media that you choose, but to actually be there, it's totally different. So, you know, you really enjoy that. So, and just aside from all that, going to a concert, you know, with performers, when the advent of radio came along, they said, oh, we don't want to be on the radio. People that sang music, they said, we don't want to be on the radio. If we're on the radio, nobody would come to our concert. Well, they were wrong. It sold out. Then come along records. Oh, we don't want to be recorded. Because if people can hear us record it, they won't come to our concert. Wrong, sold out. So they keep making money for every new technology that came along. The performers and the record companies fought it until they realized, oh, people still want to come to a concert. People, I mean, what's her name? They had the big whoop-de-doo with
that's true.
That Tyler, what's it, whatever her face is, nobody can get a ticket for her. You know, so that live experience never goes away. I don't care if it's theater, acting theater, or whether it's movie theater, or whether it's a live performance by singers and dancers, everything. Nothing can replace that live experience. And that's what we try to do with everything else.
I had a friend of mine drives a tour bus for some bands, and every band that he mentioned I never heard of, particularly some of these bands that came out of Europe. But if you go to their YouTube channel, they've got like millions of listeners and I mean millions of subscribers. And then on a tour bus, I mean, he was driving to venues where, you know, they were sold out. You know, group, I can't even remember the names now. I mean, they weren't selling out, you know, any major league stadiums or nothing like that, but they were selling out, you know, small venues like clubs and things like that nature. But, I mean, it's that's why, like, we're going to do something on social media, how to build this up or how to monetize it every Thursday because, you know, we want people to get information. Well, people want information on how you can monetize a YouTube channel, Instagram, TikTok. Then there's always something new popping up. I look at Clubhouse as a way you can essentially – you can build a radio station from Clubhouse. But then you also have to look at the new look of a radio station because the Breakfast Club, which I'm thinking most people on here might be familiar with. If not, you go on YouTube. Breakfast Club is in essence a radio show
broadcast out of New York with this guy, DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God, and then what was the female on there? She just left and started her own podcast. Oh, man, I can see it. Anyway, but it's a radio show, but they film it, and then they upload it to YouTube every day, you know, Monday through Friday. So to online listeners, we've had, I mean, the president of Mexico on there before. Hillary Clinton's been on there. Rush Limbaugh's been on there before. So it looks like with radio, they're adding the visual element to it. Maybe not all of them yet, but The Breakfast Club is just one example of that. And Reba, you get around because you do live streams at various events yourself. So going back to what I was mentioning about Singles Day in China, which can be done anywhere, is just people are collaborating and, you know, doing what they do as far as commerce or even news, so to speak. So, Willie, five-year prediction. Where do you see mass communication moving, electronic media moving over the next 5 years? Of which you already gave some stuff already. Drones. I see drones reporting news. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I just see the medium changing so much. And it's changing fast. I mean, if you think about from 2000 to now, look at all the changes that's taking place. And, you know, late night's going away. Late night TV's going away. Those type of shows are going to disappear because the medium has changed. You know, the audience has changed. And so it's a whole different thing. It's the Wild Wild West as far as technology goes. And we really can't say where it's going to end up. Just really can't say. The sci-fi people say we're going to have the stuff that's implanted in our head and we won't need a phone or anything. It's just be our thoughts floating around.
Well, you're right. I haven't watched Saturday Night Live. I haven't watched The Tonight Show. I haven't watched The Late Late Show. I haven't watched any of that stuff in 25 years easy. Now, I might catch a highlight on YouTube, but actually right. Watching that, like I said, I got a flat screen. I got a smart TV. It's disconnected in front of me. I bought it for my mother, but she passed on. I haven't watched the thing since she passed. I'm thinking about selling it. But because everything I watch is on either on a tablet, a laptop, or this phone. Those late shows, I mean, if I want late night entertainment, and I can watch something on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or these other platforms, or if I want live conversation, interactive, what I've been doing for the last, it'll be a year at the end of this month, which is we're almost at the end of this month right now. I just go on a Clubhouse. And their conversations in practically every language you can think of, covering a whole range of topics, 24. Clubhouse never sleep. Wait, are you familiar with Clubhouse yet?
No.
I'll send you the link. But I'll send you the link right after this podcast. But I sent Milk the link, but it's. To tell the truth, if you don't watch it, it can be highly addictive because
that's true.
You have some conversations. Think about it. You have some conversations that start,
and it could go on for 2 days. Because you got people that after this person chimes in, there's another. I'm going to sleep, woke up, and they're still having the same conversation. All live, nothing. I mean, you can record on there or you can do live, but it's. Reba, what's your experience with Clubhouse? They,
when I saw the 2 hour Clubhouse and 3 and 4 or 5 hour, that was really interesting to me because the conversations are from people from all over the world, not just like nationally, and so they have the moderators will tag someone else in literally to host or moderate, but then you can have several moderators who can speak. And then you control the board just like you do with Blog Talk. But the thing is, that was pretty interesting. And the good thing that one of my good experiences with those three plus hour conversations is that people like myself, I have gone to sleep and come back, and they're still on that same room. And I could chime back in, you know, you raise your hand to speak, you could chime back in and kind of catch up where you left off in a way. At the time when I first started, I was one of the, like you say, beta testers. They actually, it wasn't available on Android, and there was no recording allowed. So they got all those disclaimers in place and the policies.
Yeah, well, now it's on, because I have an Android phone. So now it's on Android.
Yes.
And you can record. You can choose to record or not record. The audio. Now, right now, there are other audio apps besides Clubhouse. But Clubhouse right now appears to be the king of the hill for the audio app genre. But here's why I say you can turn that into a de facto radio station. Number one, Clubhouse has zero government regulation. That's number one. You can say absolutely anything on it. Number two, it's free. For right now, it's free. So you can actually program, just like you program a radio station, any kind of, you know, programs that you want, you know, for talking, all this other stuff. And it's free. With Blog Talk, you know, we got like a 2 hour limit. Times if we go overtime, we can go maybe 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 50 minutes. But that's the limit on you know, for, but on Clubhouse, and you got to pay for that monthly. But on Clubhouse, for right now at least, it's free. Okay. And because what I'm looking to do, I would like to build like boots on the ground, groups, communities, boots on the ground on the local level, because when you're on the local level, you can take an idea and execute it like now, and then things go smoother. You can also troubleshoot easier, I believe, if you're in person. Audio apps, I see more of those coming. Radio, I think, to survive, they're going to have to, well, now, put it this way, now, in a small market like Hereford, Texas, where, Willie, we had a classmate, Brad Land. I got to call Brad up too. He was working at a radio station for quite a number of years. He moved down to the Dallas area, though, he and his wife, in Hereford. But Hereford has a small population. Everybody knows everybody. And that station has, there's not a whole lot of radio stations in Hereford. That's number one. And then number two, that station's basically almost been the only game in town for, man, well over 50 or 60 years. So you have local businesses in Hereford, and Hereford was one of those towns I would call real town United States of America, real town USA. Because the people in that town, they get behind, the community really gets behind you. I remember when I went in school, I went to see a basketball game there one night with Hereford High School and whoever they were playing, man, and that gym was, whoever that basketball coach was, as long as he kept on winning, he had it made in Hereford, Texas. But there's a lot of towns like Hereford, Texas, all over the United States. So I think radio stations will probably have a chance in those markets. They might have to tweak it a little bit by, you know, having cameras in there, turn on a smartphone so they can see, people can actually see if they care to do so. See you while you're doing your stream or whatever. But even with Hereford, that radio station that Bradland was on, overnight they automate. So the midnight disc jockey, which I grew up on, I don't know, Reba, if you grew up on with they had midnight disc jockeys. I mean, live people, you can call in 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning and make a request.
Herb can't,
Or just even right, shoot the breeze.
Herb Legend.
I don't think there are too many of those people left. What do you think? The midnight disc jockey.
I just see guys, even on Facebook, they're just live, doing a Facebook live. And they don't even sing. They just do their thing. I don't see them even, because I would like to, even last night I was watching this one DJ that grew up in the neighborhood with me, same neighborhood I grew up in. He had a guest DJ at his house, and he had a Facebook Live going. But he was reading some of the comments, the guy whose page it was, but the engagement, we were just enjoying the music as an audience, but I could see they don't even seem to be, like the brother mentioned, children nowadays, our young people nowadays, many of them may sit right next to each other, texting each other instead of talking. So the engagement is not really what it could be, because I would have wanted to make a request. And I'm not saying, so while he's playing those tracks, I'm thinking like, yeah, they could mix this right on in with that. My brother used to be a DJ, and then I'm a singer, so I know how, what would sound good with it, you know, mixing it in, and with not only my vocals, but, you know, other artists and other tracks. So that's how we vibe with that. But we have, even with that, have moved away from, because as far as the request, I could see them reading it, but they probably get back to it. But people aren't doing that. I'm going to actually mention that, and I'm going to have the DJs that I'm connected to, because this thing is bigger than me. I don't even want a record deal, just so you guys know. I love to sing. I don't want a record deal. I don't want nothing to do with the industry per se. So my toes will get wet again. I was offered a deal, turned it down for good reason. Back in 94, I was like 24 years old. So I want to engage them in the audience, even live once again, like I do with my young people. When I do events, Brother LA, they are actually telling, I will ask questions. It's like an interview with their table, talking about their products with the young people, and I do the, you know, the older people too. But my focus is those young people need to know how to market and advertise their items and sell them online, like for Singles Day, you know, because this is something that I was doing before I learned of Singles Day through you. But that should be a big deal to actually, you know, a lot of young people have their own products. They need to – that's what this event is all about, the Black Youth Metropolis. Our event at the Grand Ballroom, Fine Performing Arts Art and Design Conference on February 3rd at the Grand Ballroom. We're trying to make sure that young people have the resources, the advice, the mentors, the role models that are doing what they're aspiring to do under one roof.
Okay.
And we will be going till midnight. So I thought about the fact that because the DJ will be playing, the band will be shut down by the end, by 10 o'clock, but I do vocals over tracks. So I was actually going to put that online to request, like last night when I was listening to Maurice, to put a request out because people have been looking for me to sing. It's my first time singing with a live band in a long time. So, you know, putting a request out there. A lot of people have encouraged me. Gene Karn. Anybody's heard of Gene Karn? Lolita Holloway. Of course, Phyllis Hyman. That's one of her songs they mixed into the Deep House music. You guys have heard of Phyllis Hyman, of course.
Yes. The late, great Phyllis Hyman. She's gone, right?
Yes. Like, so I do a tribute to her. It's mixed. One of her songs, You Know How to Love Me, two of them that are popular in DJ mixes. So those are requests that because people have heard me sing them. So I will be doing requests once the band shuts down. I've got to prioritize the band, let them do, you know, their thing with myself and Tish and break down and then the DJ. Because this is one thing, and I do have it on video. Tish Bailey, she sang for Tavalon LaGrange in the Chicago area, LaGrange, Illinois. She actually was singing some songs, and they kind of just got into a freestyle over the track. The band was playing, and I made a request, but the girl that was singing with her, she kind of was hitting on it, but Tish was a little nervous on stage, but I made a couple of requests. You know, not only the singer, I saw what would fit and to kind of really just bring that out because she began to do different songs to kind of engage with the, you know, just switch it up a little bit to pump the crowd up and engage. So I walked up to the stage and I talked to the girl that was doing background for her. And she started doing the song. I wanted Tish to do. She was the star of the segment. So the other girl started doing some vocals over the track. But I like that idea of requesting. Oh, they doing it in Milwaukee though. As far as midnight, because they do the old school versus new school. They do I gotta remember the name the station. So they do like Gladys Knight versus Anita Baker. You know what I'm saying? So they do that. But then they also do a request segment, too, to answer your question.
Okay. Willie, where do you see the Midnight Jockey? Is he gone or is he on his way out?
I think the Midnight guy can still keep a job because there's always people that don't sleep.
True. That's true.
And back in '90 when TV started going with the advent of cable, TV became 24/7. When I started in TV, we signed off at 1 o'clock in the morning on the weekend, and 1 o'clock in the morning we'd sign off, and sign on at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then that got moved to 5:30, and then cable made it 24/7. So then we didn't have any sign off time at all. With the midnight person, I think they still have a job myself because there's always that need for.
And you know what? Now you have people that are talking like, I have friends in Uganda, so I speak to them at certain times of the day. As friends in Asia, you know, depending on what country, they can be 12 to 13 hours ahead of me. So I'll speak to them like right now. Some of them are asleep, but some of them are still awake. But I might speak to them around about, 7 or 8 a.m. on Eastern Standard Time. It'll be 8 in the morning here, but 8 p.m. there. So you're right. There are people that are up all night. And then with a lot of people that are texting, that are not, they're next to, I mean, they... Those conversations, you can have 10 people sitting side by side all texting different people, but those different people could, you know, they can be talking with people in different time zones, in foreign countries, in different cities. And then I believe, I haven't read anything on it yet, but I believe due to the fact that it's easier to make contact at least, with people in far-flung places in the United States as well as abroad, I believe you got more people that are probably traveling now to meet people. So
yeah, I had a little niece stay with us over Christmas. She's 14, but she was here it is. I'm talking about go to bed, and she says, I'm talking with a friend. I said, well, who's up at this time of night? She goes, they're in Japan.
There you go.
So she's learned to speak Japanese to some extent because she's conversing with this friend that's in Japan.
Awesome. Love it. Wow, I keep saying
it's our
world.
Our world has shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that Fortnite just gets me. There's 24 hours with that. It's just really.
Well, I've heard of Fortnite.
They're
what's
talking,
that all
so
about?
So you can talk to them live, huh? Pardon me?
Well, yeah, I've heard of Fortnite, but I thought it was some type of game. What is it?
It is a video game, and so. Just like the brother just said. And what's your name again, brother?
Willie.
So
Willie. Yes.
They get to talk live to each other. So sometimes you're playing a video game, you plug in, have your microphone, your headphones with the microphone or whatever. You're talking to somebody across the world. And I've overheard, like, my son's playing a game. Needless to say, everybody's over 22 years old, so, but they're playing a game, and I'm hearing a foreign language, and they're just getting it in. So I've heard a young person ask, well, what does that mean? What is that language that you're speaking? So that's one thing I do like about it. So it brings people closer together from across the world. It gives our young people an idea that, hey, you know, Chicago or whatever city I'm in is bigger than, you know, the world is bigger than just my city.
And there are a lot of places to go. Well, we're going to cover, not today, but we're going to, like next week, we're going to get into specifically the ways to make money with YouTube, Instagram, and whatever else is out there. I imagine with Fortnite, there are people making money with that too, Reba? I don't know.
Yeah, they have to, you have a free version, and then you download different skins. So they have a different way. So when I say skins, you pay for that. You have free ones, but then somebody might want, and when I say skins, these are characters, and they have a certain look. So one could look like an avatar. One could look like a superhero, And so, yeah, it's a shooting game, so I'm not very fond of it because that's how they're doing it, you know, on the attack. They run through different cities and different rural and country areas. It's just really interesting that they're so engaged. But they make their money. They make their money through the skins, and there's another way. Yeah, I don't like video games too much, but I want to see young people create their own video game. I would love to see them create a video game.
There's a lot of money in gaming. I don't know that much about gaming online, but you got teenagers now that are professionals at that stuff.
This one guy, he won. Brother, I think the guy, he was 16, did he win $1 million? I think he won $1 million. He's 16, so he beat out the other gamers and won $1 million, 16 years old. And he was in the last round. He was in a room. And, see, they weren't just using, like, the joystick. They were using a keyboard. So imagine that. The minor motor skills, the focus, the concentration, the alertness that you have to be able to not only type that fast, and I'm like, well, what? I've seen a video, but it was from at a distance, but there was like a room of like 100 competitors, and this 16-year-old beat people of different ages out. He won at $1 million. as the best gamer. There's a YouTube video. I'll share it sometime. So yeah.
Next week we're gonna next Thursday we're gonna go through YouTubers because there are YouTubers out here that are making anywhere from $15,000 to $35,000 a month to over six figures a month on YouTube. So that
yeah, my oldest son was telling me I need to do that. Yeah.
So we're going to get into the mechanics of YouTube, and I mean, as much as I can, I'm going to bring YouTubers on here that are making that kind of cash, and then, you know, sharing with us, or, you know, what do we need to do to make that. I met a couple down here in Florida. They were, now this is like 10, 15 years ago, probably 15 years ago. They were making $2,500 a week off of doing, like, YouTube videos. This is offline. They would do a product demonstration online. They would load up the video on YouTube, and then they would get orders from people that were interested in some of the things they were demonstrating. That's how I met them and became friends with them. And that's when I was in D.C. So when I came down to Florida, you know, because they only live about 30 minutes away from me right now. So that was a different YouTube. Now YouTube has Super Chat, you know, people selling merchandise.
They have the subscriptions too.
Right, they have the subscriptions, yeah. They can make money from that too. So next week we're doing all YouTube, and we're probably throwing some Instagram. Because there are people with all kind of backgrounds. I mean, they're hairdressers that are making a living off of Instagram.
Yeah.
Now, I know a little bit about, I used to do eBay auctions. So I'll share, you know, how I used to make money with eBay auctions. But next week will be heavy YouTube. Anyway, Willie, we're going to let you close it out. Any final thoughts for today?
Just be ready for what's coming next. What is that? We don't know. But the thing is, you know, I'm sorry, I forget the lady's name that's speaking, but
Reba. Her name is
Reba. But today, and I've said this for a while to a lot of young people. Today, there's no excuse for a young person not to make a living because the avenues for making a living are endless. You know, and like you're saying, get on doing something. I tried to encourage my son years ago to start blogging about, he always complained about, he loved playing the video game, but he always had a complaint about it. And I said, well, put that out there. Go start blogging about it. Start talking about it. Because now, you'll find other people interested in talking about that game, but then the manufacturer wants your input. They'll probably send you some games to play for free. Then they're paying you to judge their games, to analyze them. And then you can comment on them. And I said, you have an income right there just on stuff you like. And that's basically where we're going with this. And, I mean, like Lee is trying to figure out, you know, would it be productive enough or income-wise enough to have a local online radio station? Would it generate enough income to sustain itself? Well, it's possible, but what would it take? How would you get to your audience? You know, the yard sale sign still works. You put a yard sale sign out in the corner, and you still get people show up for your yard sale.
That's true.
You may
You're
not
right.
get a lot of people, but you get people. I mean, a lot of people like to announce it on Facebook, for sure. But, you know, one thing I found out, we try to do a yard sale, and we announce it on Facebook, and we had people show up, and almost every person that showed up, they showed up because they saw the sign. We found two people. We probably had about, I would say, 60 or 70 people come. But we only had two people said, oh, I saw it on Facebook. That actually showed up. Now, a lot of people might have saw it on Facebook, but they didn't come. But the people that were in the yard were the ones that saw the signs. Those are the ones that were stopping.
You're right. You know, yard sales, those still work. Yeah, and you see abandoned signs, those still work. So you're right. There's a lot of local tools that can work, still work.
Look at a car. Look at a car dealer. Car dealers have a tough job. What do? They put those inflatables out there. Yeah, they advertise on everything. But what attracts person's attention? Is it the price of the car? Nah. Is it the fact they give away free hot dogs? Nah. But they can put that little carnival with the pony out there, and people stop and let their kids ride that pony. So they might they might look at a car while they're there, while their kids ride the pony.
That's true.
Using their experience, and you spark something in them. That's powerful, what you just shared, because that's kind of what I do, not only with music, with Spanish, though. I really appreciate that. That's powerful. And I'll share sometimes some of what I got out of that.
Yeah. Well, I have digital. I have a digital business card because you know on your phone, so I have my contact information on my phone, and so when somebody says you got a business card, and I open. They say, oh, give me your number. So I just pop my phone up with the QR code, and I said, just scan that. So e-card. So it's ready to go, but there's still nothing like having a physical card in your hand.
Yeah.
People still want to hold that card, whether you give it to them digitally or not.
Okay. Well, food for thought. Thank you, Willie, for coming on. Thank you, Reba. Thank you, everybody, for listening, calling in. Like I say, next week we're covering YouTube, particularly particulars on how to make money with it, as well as TikTok and some other things. And on that note, we're going to have Willie back, and then Willie, I'm going to, because Milt, he's teaching school right now, but I'm going to see if I can get him on one day in the future to get me, you, him on there, probably Bradland and Mariana Kidd, some of those old classmates we had. Because Mariana, she's she teaches full time. I don't know what aspect of mass comm she teaches of, but I think she's somewhere in East Texas now. Tyler, someplace, I don't know. But Brad worked in sales for quite a number of years as a general sales manager at the station, and but now you worked. Your perspective is unique because you probably had more overall experience, different experiences. And then Milton, he was selling cable television during what I would call the pioneer days of cable. And the reason why I say pioneer days, when I met you guys, when I came to school in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, those places, there was no such thing as cable television. Canyon, Texas was ahead. Matter of fact, any part of Texas was ahead of, and one of the things I learned from that looking back at it is if you want to see what's going to happen or coming to New York, L.A., Chicago, Miami, those big markets, go to small town America. Canyon, Texas, Hereford, Texas, Hobbs, New Mexico, Podunk, Iowa, Dubuque, Iowa. Go to those places, and then what you see there and you don't see in the larger city, that's a common attraction to where you are. And then for you global travelers, if you go to – basically go anywhere and see what they're doing – in those foreign lands, which they're not doing here, then you'll probably see some. Because I look at the United States as an end market, an end retail market. We'll jump on a bandwagon if we see it work somewhere else first. So
that's true.
Your radio honey joined us, and I know we have your guest for today, Willie. But your radio honey just wanted her to say hi. I merged the call.
So she's going to be, she does a mobile connection. So she's boots on the ground out in the community all the time. So you there?
No, we'll see.
Yes.
Yeah,
what,
yeah,
I'm,
Hello. Well, give us your background.
How you doing? My background is communications. Communications, broadcast, thinking, shows like the Steve Harvey Morning Show, Tom Joyner's Morning Shows, Clear Channel, just speaking. Mic up.
Okay. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Steve, now, I love Steve Harvey. I play Steve Harvey on here to start the day practically every morning. But Steve Harvey, whoever else out there, you know, Ricky Smiley, you know, all those people, they're not going to be coming to, more than likely, you're not going to see them in a local market. And that's where, like I said, we were talking about earlier, the local celebrity.
Uh-huh.
I think there's room enough for a local celebrity or one that could be invented and a lot of markets, because, like I say, the Steve Harvey, Monique, the brand names that we know nationally, you know, where they, you know, I'm more prone to spend advertising with in Chicago because I know Revo yourself. Because, you know, how often does Steve Harvey come to me? I mean, the local celebrity is there every week. Steve Harvey might come, what, once a year or so? I don't know.
Right. That's You're right. Thought. He comes a couple times to just on set. You're right. Yep. The syndicate.
And Latina is one of the professionals that I'm getting my young people in front of. So that she actually has young people that she works with as well, but she's actually doing it. She's taking her experience and she's running with it. And the energy that she has is just amazing. So I wanted to basically just, you know, introduce her real quick, but she's actually going to bring some of her youth and do a part in the conference on Friday, February 3rd, Grand Ballroom, Chicago. So if anybody listening is in the city, Brother L.A. is actually our overseer for the Tiny Bill Project, and I'll give you an update whenever we want to get back on the air and talk about that, give you an update to the audience, Brother L.A. with the Tiny Bill, Tiny Solar.
All right, on that moment. Note, before they kick us off, because we're in overtime, thanks, Willie, thanks, Radio Honey,
yeah.
Thanks, you, everybody.
Thank you.
On that note, you're welcome, Chris.
Enjoyed it.